So we found sort of the best way to start this is just start at the very, very beginning. So tell us about when and where you were born.
I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. One of five children, two girls. We got to be born in the hospital. The three boys were all born at home. And really, that's how we were divided through life. Two girls worked at the phone company. Three brothers were operating engineers.
Wow. Very cool. And what did your parents do for a living?
My father was a steel worker for years, and once he did retire, he entertained himself, I'm going to say, selling used cars and betting on the horses. I tried to learn the system. I never could win $52,000 for the pick six, but he did.
So when he was a steel worker, was he in the steel workers union?
Yes, he was. He worked at
And how
Bethlehem
long did he work
Steel.
there? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
He worked for 30 years. He took the 30 and out. He retired young, just like, a lot of our phone company people wound up doing here with these early retirements, because they got into that period where they retooled, outsourced jobs, and really closed up what was considered Bethlehem Steel, Sparrows Point in Maryland. But here's a couple generations later, my oldest son works at that location for an industry called Lafarge Industry. It's one of the largest concrete manufacturers. And what they're doing
Wow.
is claiming the earth back there, cleaning it up, and they take that gravel and work with the barges that come in. It is amazing some of the archival things that he finds, brings back. And he's also a local president of the steel workers that represent that group.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Wow, this is genetic.
I think.
Yeah.
Must have been those
And your
disciplinary
mother? Tell us
meetings.
about your mother.
My mom was a homemaker. She did work before the five of us got there, but wasn't until later in life she did go out, and she worked a small job. You'll see these people in Costco and places like that are giving out samples or whatever, grocery stores. She did that, and she liked it because of the social aspect of it. She did that for a few years, but never really had a real career other than kids.
Yeah, that's a pretty good job.
Yeah.
So, where are you in the pecking order of the five?
I'm number two, oldest
Okay.
daughter, second child.
So lots of pictures of the first child, not many of you. Is that how it goes?
Well, there's a couple, even less of the three,
Yeah.
four, and five.
My sister, I'm the oldest. My sister complains that there's lots of pictures of me as a baby, but very few of her. So
Right, that's how it goes.
the novelty had worn off, I guess, by the time the second one came. Where'd you go to school?
I went to school here in Maryland. I went to Perry Hall. I went to a couple elementary schools, but I graduated from Perry Hall Senior High. And from there, this is one quirk I had with my parents. They believed the boys should go to college and the girls should marry someone from college. I'm not sure how that osmosis works, but it really wasn't. It was my goal really to go to college. So when you get into the phone company at 16 and you're paying attention, because a lot of people don't pay attention to these things, I found their tuition assistance plan. And I went at night. I went to community college and got my AA degree there. And then through the National Labor College, got a BA in labor studies. And they paid for it. I reminded them of that often.
All a Catholic school or public school?
Public school.
You said you started at the phone company at 16?
Yes, I
So tell
did.
us about that.
So I started on like summer break from school. I was still in high school. And
Doing what?
started where all women work, directory assistance. That's where we all start. And from there, I worked until like May of the following year. And I worked shifts like 2 to 10. I worked some 12 to 8, 1 to 9. They couldn't work me past 10 o'clock, but that gave me full-time hours. So it allowed me to really garner almost a whole year's service before I became permanent. I only went to school like not even a full day, but it wasn't a half a day. They have classes. I know they call diversified occupation, but I did not go through that. I went to my own, whatever I had as credits, whatever I needed to stick in there, they did, and let me go about my life, which was good. Then after I worked in director assistance for, I want to say, 3 years.
Stop there before you go too far. So I want to talk a little bit more about this working. So you're in high school.
Right.
You start maybe when you're a junior or just after your junior year.
Correct.
And then all through your senior year of high school.
Correct.
And is there a separate rate of pay, or is this same rate as
the
operator
rate
you're sitting next to?
You're just classified as a temporary employee, and that didn't matter whether I was a high school student or someone hired off the street at legal age. But I stayed in that job for 3 years, couldn't wait to move someplace else. And I did become familiar, and I'm going to say it was called the MAP program, where they let you look at jobs through the company. And
let me stop you. What year is this now?
I went to work there in 1970.
Okay.
And this would have been like 74.
Mm-hmm.
73, 74. But from there, I applied for the job of service representative. They even posted those, I remember, on the bulletin board. Went down, tested out, and was given the job. And couldn't wait to get out of there. It's like you died and went to heaven, because first of all, it was more pay. Two, there was a little more flexibility, and it was a little more challenging. And back when I was a service representative, it was a job where you did the billing side, the sales side. It wasn't very diversified, which is what it's like today. You either just sell or you just collect. But it was like reading a book. Every customer coming on the line was a new chapter, you know. So you really kind of made your day go fast. So I guess maybe 5 years after that, I went back to that map binder, and I applied for a frame attendant job, which is a plant job in our area. And the goal there was, if I'm going to work, I might as well work for money. And that certainly paid more money. So after applying, qualifying, I moved on to the frame.
And this is all after the Bell System entered into the consent decree with the EEOC.
I have an article somewhere where it shows 1983. I was interviewed here by the Sun Papers, because I'm right there at divestiture. I'm a female in a male job. Frame attendant was considered that. Mm-hmm. So it was up to that point, and I guess I had been on the frame maybe 2 years. But what I did in that period of time, and I remember that interview, was to say that, you know, I'm not stagnant. I'm not going to stay here. I was taking schools through what they call the Atlas program, taking some of their classes, like basic electricity, binary numbering system. All of that helped me pass the test for central office technician, which I moved into maybe about 4 years after being on the frame.
Just to jump in,
sure.
The EEOC was in 1973.
Yeah, I didn't come under that at all, as far as applying for jobs, et cetera. To my knowledge, I'll say. If it did enter into it, I was never said, oh, you fit this category, and we get to check you off the list.
They didn't specifically recruit you as a female to go into a tech job.
Nope.
Jeff, if you don't mind, can you say what did you do as a frame attendant?
As a frame attendant, we installed the wiring inside of all of these brick buildings you see that was for plain old telephone service, or what we called POTS, so that an installer could come out on the other end, connect to the wire at the terminals and posts, and give a customer new service, or in reverse, disconnect it. But there were several different technologies that I worked through, from 5 crossbar to 2 ESS, a different type of office equipment, which made the job progressively get less labor intense, and I kind of found to be easier.
2 ESS is digital, right?
Correct.
And when you said in the brick buildings, those are in the central offices.
Central offices, right.
And you were with C&P Telephone?
I was with C&P Telephone.
In Baltimore?
In Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what's the difference then between a frame attendant job and then a central office technician job?
A central office technician, I remember one of them telling me this once, gets paid for what they know, not what they do. In other words, you can be the trouble person. So if something breaks, you're going to be responsible to figure out what's broken and you're going to fix it. Or they also did similar job to the frame attendant, but they worked on special circuits. Special circuits meaning businesses, hospitals, you know, not the plain old telephone service.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. Let's harken back a few years then. When you're a service rep, are you dealing with residential customers or business customers?
I dealt with residential customers.
Okay.
And actually, okay. I split from there. I didn't stay in one office. I went and did a couple of years when American Bell came around. Remember that? It was a phone center store. I worked in the mall. And from there, I worked in a public office. I enjoyed those jobs, too, because they were face-to-face. You had that contact with people. You weren't just sitting behind a telephone all day. But the service rep job in the office was still interesting because you probably handled 35 calls a day, and everyone was different.
And this was before the computers, so you were dealing with paper records.
Correct.
Okay, so let's go back to your 16 now. You enter into that office. Are you approached about joining the union at that point?
Well, at that point, it was not CWA. The union that represented operators in Maryland at the time was known as MTU, Maryland Traffic Union. They eventually merged with CWA. And yes, I was approached to join the union. And yes, I did.
So tell us a little bit about Maryland Traffic Union. This is a bit of CWA lore that I didn't know about.
Well, Maryland Traffic Union, primarily they had the directory assistance operator and the, I could call them a long distance operator, O operator. They also had dial administration clerks, which was a little strange to me, but nonetheless, that was the three job titles that they had. And it wasn't a real strong union, in my opinion, as I look forward or I look back, I guess, wasn't a very strong union. They were not aggressive. I don't think I saw a grievance handled in the Baltimore office that I worked in. I did see one handled in the Halliburton Avenue office that I worked in. They just weren't as aggressive. You had as many discipline problems, that's for sure.
Do you know how many people were in that union?
It wasn't, it probably was only a couple hundred. You know what? I can't speak to that. I'll say a couple hundred that I'm going to be familiar with, but they covered Washington, D.C., Virginia, and West Virginia, so there were probably a couple thousand. Mm-hmm. That'd be something in our archive somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, you don't recall what year they merged with CWA?
It was like around 72, 3, somewhere in there.
So while you're still an operator?
Yes.
They merged. Okay. And did the union leadership then become local leaders at that point? Did they merge into a local or did they get their own local?
They got their own local. Mm-hmm. In Maryland, it was 2110. Mavon Garrett was the president.
Okay, so then you go on to service rep. You're already in the union.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a different local, though, then, at that point. What local
Correct.
Were you in then?
I was in local 2100, which is the local.
Okay, so this is when you first arrived in 2100.
Correct.
Okay.
And that, that at the time, we had a local president that was very supportive of females, which you didn't see a lot of that, believe it or not. In line, and probably the first time I met him is when I called the office and said, somebody's got to get down here and talk to these people about how to pick on a schedule, because we all didn't work the same shifts. You had change in shifts, and it shouldn't be that somebody gets stuck with the late shift all the time, or vice versa. There were people that didn't like the early shift. So they came down. It was in the public office. They came down, and we just sat in a group and talked with management. There was no grievance filed or anything, but I was just impressed that they came. They addressed the issue, and we got it resolved. They followed up by, this was one of them hooks. I remember Al Anderson and Mike telling me about this one day. Yeah, this is how you hook them. You invite them to the meeting. You feed them some food. He said, you talk to them. You build them up. And then you got them. And really, that's some of it. That is how we bring some people in to try to build that some friendship. Not necessarily you have to be best friends, but you've got to be cordial and be interested in one another.
And is that how they got you?
Yeah, pretty much after that incident there. And then, you know, a little further down the road, I got suspended for being late to work, of all things. And I was just beside myself. I said, it's like everybody's late to work here. But I was the example is how it turned out. Long story short, we grieved it. And the second step, they gave it back and they explained that, you know, since we suspended you, it's really improved around here. And that's why I got that time back. But I thought, you know, that kind of did make sense to me. Mm-hmm. I could have carried that as a chip, but chose not to. And that kind of brought me in, and I continued going to the stewards meetings. And then around election time, they had asked me to run for the area vice president, which 2100 in Maryland has always been the plant local. They had all the cable splicers in all the counties, I'm going to say, except Prince George's and Montgomery and part of Anne Arundel and the Eastern Shore. Those were other locals. But other than that, we had five or six counties the other direction. So there were
which direction?
North.
Well, the people listening may not even know what north.
Well, that would be Baltimore County, Carroll County, Frederick County. It would be Cecil County, Harford County. It would be northern Anne Arundel County. I think that about covers the counties there.
So Maryland, north of the D.C. suburbs toward Baltimore, but not Baltimore City.
And Baltimore City. I would include that Baltimore County, Baltimore City to me.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a large geographical area. It was a lot of outside plant members, so we had that per capita, the dollars. And we were able to do things that a lot of the locals couldn't. And thank goodness Albert believed in it too, and that was you got to educate people. So we did our own stewards training and what have you, long before I really saw it at the national level, which at the national level and our local level, I'll say we were just heads above other organizations out there that I become affiliated with, the AFL-CIO, really at the community college, a couple of courses that I took there, one in collective bargaining that it was me and all these auto workers. World of difference. World of difference. But, yeah, that's when I became involved because I, A, got in trouble and I saw how they operated. And through that steward system and through them inviting me in, run for a job here.
So you're asked to be a steward. What job were you in when you were asked to be a steward? Is that when you're in the public office?
I was in the frame.
In the okay, so you're already in the frame.
I was already
okay.
In the frame.
And they asked you to be a steward.
Yes.
And then shortly after that, you're asked by who to be run for area vice president.
The president of the local asked me to run for the area vice president job, district vice president they called it. And I was still a frame attendant at the time. I ran and beat my opponent 2-1. Mm-hmm. And boy, doesn't that give you the confidence when you're like the only female on the frame, the only female in the central office at the time, and you're looking around thinking, okay, oh, there were other reasons I got that job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so when you run for this, you described it as a district vice president. Is this a geographic district that you represent, or is it a job discipline that you represent?
Geographic.
Okay.
So I had the inside and outside titles. There were central office people, central office technicians, and mm-hmm. there were cable splicers and installers, INR techs.
Okay. And just for my benefit, so 2100, does that include service reps as well?
It did.
Or are they a separate local?
It did when they were located in areas of our jurisdiction.
Okay.
But after a while, they were moved out of our jurisdiction.
Okay. Okay. So you're now district vice president, and tell us about that. You're, one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is you're a bit of a unicorn here. So you've done all kinds of jobs within the phone company then had like every job within the union.
Most staff rep told me once, can't you hold on to a job?
Yeah, right. Well, that's great for our benefit because we want to try and capture as much of this as we can. So. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
So as a district vice president, I represented, like I say, these outside technicians, and it helped me understand their job. I will not say that I learned how to do their job. It certainly taught me how to understand their job. But at the end of the day, I always thought that the problems they had were the same problems inside people had. A lot of the grievances were the same. You know, the scheduling issues are the same. The lateness and absence issues are the same. It just, they're people issues. They're not just specifically to the way you do your job, I'll say. That came much later when they decided we'll shortcut this and we'll make quantity and quality really count. It'll be quality for a while and not necessarily quantity, and then we'll reverse it and it's just how many widgets you make and not how many or not how well you do them.
So. Okay, so you're district vice president. How many districts are in the local at that time?
Seven were in the local
seven.
At that time.
Okay, so you're one of seven.
Right.
You're on the executive board of the local?
Correct.
Okay, and who's president at this time?
Al Anderson was president at the
time. Al's still president.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how long did you serve as the district vice president for your region?
I served 1 3-year term because when the term was up, we were losing our treasurer, or we wanted to lose our treasurer, and they had me run for that. So I became the treasurer at that point.
Okay.
And while I was really not as heavily involved at that point of representing. I was really the administrative end. I enjoyed it. And actually is when I was promoted to central office technician and the job I took put me on nights in Baltimore City. And it was convenient because I would carry the books with me and do the books while at work. They did a silly thing there. They promoted a couple of us and they would give us a set amount of work to do. It's because we were taking circuits down, and they're special circuits. We're taking them down and we're putting SMAS points in. They call them their remote testing points, so that remotely they could test those lines whenever they had problems. So we would take it down, we would rewire it, and put it back up. They would let us do 5 a night. Well, that took 25 minutes. I'm telling you, I did all kind of crafts. I did the locals' books. I took a nap one time. I only did it once. I said, the guy I worked with, I said, you are not a good lookout. Because our boss came in. He didn't catch me sleeping, but he did come in. But that was hard. That was very hard to do. You were, you know, was I going to sweep the floor? Yeah, that was already clean. Because after all,
okay,
their assignment was there.
So what year is this now that you're elected treasurer?
I'm going to say it.
Just a ballpark.
It's hard to do that. Let me do the math with Denny. Denny is 43. That would be... it'd be 35 years ago, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how long did you serve as treasurer?
I served for... not that complete term.
Okay. Oh, tell us about that.
Our executive vice president, who was Bill Brandt at the time, he left. He took a management job.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hold it against him. He's a good guy. But I had to run for that job. So, well, I didn't have to, but I chose to. I ran for that job, and I became the executive vice president. Mm-hmm. And he asked me what year that was. It's a... like 1988, so that kind of puts it in. Yeah, Denny must have not been there before that. Let me correct that right now. He must not have been here yet, or it was Brian wasn't here. Have to rethink that there. Denny was here. He was born in 81. Brian was born in 88. But it was 88, I took the treasurer's job, or not the treasurer, but the EVP's job. And it was like 3 months later, Al went in business with his brother and left Verizon, retired. Our bylaws read that the EVP moved into the president's spot. So I became president by virtue of the bylaws at that point. But I will tell you that after that fact, I never had opposition except one time. Thank you, Pete Cattucci. Yeah, we fought a lot, but I think it was healthy in the end.
He ran against you?
No, Pete Cattucci had somebody run against me. Yeah, and that's fine.
So this is 1984 now, right? You're president
of
local.
I think she's at
88.
Your bio says 84.
Does it?
Yeah.
Look at it again. Yeah. What is it? That could be.
So you're president.
That's right. Brian was not born until 88. And I remember thinking, okay, boy, this is going to be pretty. I'm going to be this big when I run for this job. Yes.
So it was 88 or 84?
It was 84. What's it say, Jeff?
Well, it says that she led the local as president from 1984 through 2004.
Well, that might have been when I moved over into the slot from Albert. Then I'd have to look at that timeline again. But when I had to run, I knew I was pregnant.
Yeah, it says from 76 to 84, you're job steward, area vice president, executive vice president, and treasurer.
There you go.
I guess not in that sequence, obviously. But,
no.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So how many members are in 2100? In 1984, when you become president?
We're probably about 4,000.
Okay, so here you are, you're president of a major local in the district, the largest local in the district?
No, okay. There were probably four other locals that were larger.
Oh, really? Okay.
But they didn't beat us in dues. We had the higher dues payers.
Yeah, so substantial local for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm guessing, you know, based on my experience, a female president of a plant local of that size was a bit unusual in that time.
Yes.
Okay.
But they knew I cussed.
Yeah, so tell us about that experience working with, you know, these.
Well, I did have some people come up and say, I can't believe we have a woman as our local president. Mm-hmm. Once they got to know me, it was very different. Mm-hmm. But I had some contention from some of the other local presidents who mm-hmm. actually thought they knew what their jobs were. But, you know, we get along after a period of time. But the new people on the block, they got to get their comeuppance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't say it was unbearable. I survived it. And within the local, I didn't really have any enemies within my local, to be mm-hmm. honest. I've had my old secretary, who is just recently retired down there, has told the new staffer up here, she said, oh, everybody loved Gail. She'd just do whatever they wanted. I said, well, that means when they had a problem, we tried to address it. It wasn't that we did what they wanted. It's that we tried to fix it. That's our job, is to be a problem solver, which is probably what I liked about all of these jobs more. Whether it be the leadership in the local or negotiating contracts, same thing. You're trying to solve problems, hopefully.
So any interesting experiences, particularly with your peers as local president during that time frame?
Well, like running for bargaining as the Maryland mm-hmm. representative, I can remember being at a president's meeting stating, yes, I'm running, and I had the votes. I knew that I had the votes. But a supporter of the current administration, which I wasn't, stood up to address the fact that he was going to run also. And he looked over at me and he said, Gail, as a mother of two, you probably don't have the time that it's going to take. I mean, it was just all so negative. I said, really, you dying left you, boss. But we didn't fight. I just said, let him talk. I had already proven myself to enough people. When you can count, then you stop. Why waste your energy?
So is that how bargaining was arranged? You elected somebody from each state, or?
Well, back then, yes, we had four contracts. Well, let me back up. We had four states in the contract for CNP Telephone. At one time, that was four contracts, but they merged. But we still kept a representative from each state. And you were elected by the presidents of that state.
And what were the states? Just
Maryland, West Virginia, Virginia, and Washington, D.C.
Okay. So, and your local 2100 is one of the larger ones in Maryland.
It's one of the larger ones within what the area of Maryland is called. The local that has Prince George's and Montgomery County was probably the largest local in our state. But for reasons of bargaining, and it's outlined in their contracts, they are considered part of the metropolitan Maryland suburban Washington, D.C. area.
Okay.
So that's why it took them out. So I really had had not, well, I had to work a few people, but not all of them. Somebody that had 150 people.
Right. Tell us about your first bargaining experience. What was that like? As a local officer on the bargaining team?
I took it seriously. I did. I served with three other people out of our district. And it was 1992 bargaining, I believe. It was not really a prolonged bargaining. I can't remember whether that was one that we struck or not, to be honest. What's it say, Jeff?
I don't think
so. Doesn't tell me.
Not in there? Okay.
No.
Boy, you should have told me to bring a resume.
I've just got your little clip from your retirement party. That's all I've got.
Did they ever lie? Well, I think 95 was the year we struck. So 92, just trying to think of who was on that committee. It was probably Jim Pappas, Jim Hillary, and Steve Moss out of West Virginia. And I think we worked well together. Back then, we used to have national table. And then you had a local table, as you probably did out in District 4, too. But the real bargaining between the members on the committee came at that local table. That was in the days where the company said, I got this amount of dollars, spend them how you will. So it really put it back on us to argue among ourselves about where that money would go. But it didn't get ugly. We were fair. I mean, they knew it made sense. They knew that unless they saw a way for me to be able to sell it to Maryland people, and that meant give them some of the local stuff too, not just the national stuff, that without that, it might fail as a whole when they voted to accept that contract. So we bargained among ourselves and got there.
When you said national bargaining.
When you say go ahead, I'm sorry.
Same question, so go with it, Jeff.
Yeah, when you say national, at that point, the Bell system has been broken up, and so now you're no longer part of the Bell system. You're part of Verizon.
Correct.
No.
And
Bell Atlantic.
Bell Atlantic at the time.
Bell Atlantic. Okay, you hadn't merged yet.
Right.
Into Verizon. Okay.
Right.
And so where's the national table for Bell Atlantic at that point?
I'm sure. At
post divestiture.
I'm sure that it was the IBEW out of New Jersey, and then also what was District 13,
Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey Bell.
Right.
So you had Pennsylvania Bell, Delaware, and New Jersey Bell, which was odd because that was District 1, and then
and
CMP.
They were IBEW.
If you did joint bargaining,
yeah. So, yeah, there were issues at the common table. We used to call it common issues that were, you know, everybody's common language and health care, those big ticket items. And then there were local issues that got incorporated into your own agreements.
So, Jeff, in District 4, you did not have that structure, correct? After you had merged the Michigan Bell, Illinois Bell, Indiana Bell, et cetera, contracts into Ameritech. You had Ameritech bargaining. You did not have local bargaining. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we merged through some tortuous process the five contracts that we originally had in the Bell system into one contract under Ameritech.
And when did that happen here? Has it happened?
Well, I would say that the...
Do you still have a CMP contract?
No.
Okay.
What we have is a Potomac contract. You can call it CMP, but it's Potomac. And they have District 13,000 has their own contract. 13,500, which are the service reps in Pennsylvania. And then you have, in Delaware, you have a plant and a commercial.
So you still have common issues for Bell Atlantic South.
Correct.
Or Verizon South, it's
correct.
Now called. And you have local.
And you have local.
Wow. Okay, so that's your first round of negotiations. You serve on more bargaining committees after that, obviously,
yes.
Over a 20-year period as president?
I served in 1995 also, mm-hmm. which that was a prolonged bargaining. It went, when it expired in August, we worked, I guess, extensions through to like January 26th. It got dated the next year, so that was a very long one. But not as long as the ones I ended up with. But... There again, I didn't have the responsibility that Barbara Schiller is who was there, or Barbara Lephart at the time. But that experience, I mean, that's a good experience. It's a learning experience.
And where did you bargain these contracts at?
We bargained those in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. At different hotels.
And did you commute? Did you commute or
stayed.
Did you stay over?
We lived there weeks on end. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we would break for a week or two. Sometimes it would be 3 days, the beginning of the week were common issues, and the last 2 days would be local issues. So the North or the Pennsylvania people would go back to their area to do their bargaining locally. But ours was local enough there, we stayed right there.
So you were on both common issues and
yes.
the CMP tables?
Yes.
Okay, so you serve, according to your retirement, mm-hmm. as local president for 20 years, till 2004, and then you joined the CWA staff. Tell us how that process took place.
Yes. So somewhere along the line, Pete and I made up.
Mm-hmm. Pete Cattucci,
right.
Who was your district vice president.
He was the district vice president. And actually, a staff rep was terminally ill, was Jan Bootlegary. And she had talked to him, I understand. This is after the fact, somebody told me. And she told him, I don't know what you're afraid of her for. She does the job that you really would want everyone to do. And then he came out and asked me if I was interested in the job, that he would like to have me on the staff. So I did accept that job, a cut in pay for a girl. But
wow.
Nonetheless, yeah, I took the job. I could hit the street running on that job because it was a very... much like a chief steward's job in our local,
mm-hmm.
handling the top step of the grievance. And that really was your main responsibility because we had a few locals here that's all they did was turn those grievances out. The education, trying to educate locals, whether you're doing local officer training, whether you're doing things with them in the political arena, took second place to those grievances being churned. But nonetheless... we cared for it till we could outgrow it.
Mm-hmm. So all during, I mean, this era, so take from when you first started at the phone company up until you joined the staff in 2004, it's, you know, a time of pretty tumultuous change within the telecom industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So... can you tell us a little bit about how you managed that, particularly as a local leader, but also, you know, prior to your leadership in the local as well?
Well, as a local leader, and especially somebody that served on bargaining and helped with language about technological change, about the tuition plan and the way we expanded that, I mean, it covered, you could study to do anything. I'm saying literally anything under that plan. But it helped me in trying to help people that were targeted, their positions were targeted, to be downsized. One thing that was a selling point for me was, you know, get this education. This is something nobody can take away from you. And get something that you want to do. Because if you're no longer working here, why would you want to get telecommunications classes under your belt? Unless you see that you can be promoted through the ranks and be that outside labor-intense job title, I would say that most of the others are really targets.
Which ones?
Frame attendant was a target. Central office technician, downsized greatly. Didn't do away with them, but downsized greatly. I'll bet you don't have a handful of frame attendants left out here.
And this is because of the move from
It's part of it.
Mechanical to
it's
digital.
It's part of it, yeah. But also a lot of clerical positions when you think about it. That technology really, we all did our own letters, we typed them. And I'm going to say that internally within Verizon's operations, they didn't need all that clerical staff either. They had their field people, you know, they would specialize. They have a supervisor in the garage that did nothing but mark down absences and latenesses and maintained administrative records. So that was a supervisor's position now, and he just absorbed the clerical pieces that somebody else used to do. Where they made the assignment of phone numbers, for example, a plan assigner. It's only one piece of that job, but it's one that I remember that they can do it by a computer now, so that's one piece gone, and then this is another piece gone. So you're somebody that's on the hit list, too. You'd also get the notices for surplus, and you get them far enough in advance that people need to really start looking at that. I took, in my local here again, mostly outside plant people, interviewed with a group that had these private training classes, little schools that tapped into our tuition assistance, and they set up classes. We probably had about 8 of them where we got outside technicians to be interested in them. I took those classes with them where we built our own computers, put them back together. But it's not a skill I'm going to use forever and a day, but nonetheless, I did it to demonstrate that, yeah, anybody can do it. You need to get out here and get this. And that helps some people in passing tests for other jobs. That's the other thing. An engineering assistant, that's a horrendous test. But if they're paying attention, and if they would read more, we used to tease them, read more, it would certainly help them go a long way.
Did they teach you how to use headphones on a Mac?
Not really. That
oh,
Mac
okay.
is hard.
All right. Well, lost on me then. Okay, so now you're on the CWA staff. You've joined with a leader who was a little skeptical of you,
yeah.
at least years gone by.
Yes.
So tell me about that experience. What kind of assignments did you have right out of the box when you
right
stepped
out of the
into
box,
that role?
He gave me those locals that were the grinders of grievances, I'll tell you. I had the Washington, D.C. group, and I had the Maryland Suburban 2108. And then after a while, I expanded. I had the Eastern Shore, too, because we were down people, and they were moving people. But it was manageable. I enjoyed that, though. Kept me busy. There's nothing worse than having downtime, and it wasn't downtime you could add onto your weekend or what have you, but, yeah. And I got along. After a while, we kind of respected one another. I can remember a few things that he asked me about, and I said, you know what, when you did that when I was a local president, it did set me off. I said, that's why you got a pen pal letter that day. That's why this happened. I said, so if you want to respond back to letters, I said, go ahead. It's good therapy. I used to do it too, and then I throw them in the trash because all you're doing is prolonging this stuff. But at the end of the day, I remember some comments he made at a district conference, the last one. He said that it goes back to that reading thing. He said, I listened to her one day. He said, to an old local that I belong to, he said, somebody called her with a question, and she said, do you have your contract there? Okay, go to page 32. Okay, read with me. he said, I bet they never call back and ask that question again. At least not to me. But, again, it was about, gee, I saw that light a long time ago to start educating yourself around here.
So you've at some point here, then you go from being a staff rep to an administrative assistant. Is that your next
yes.
step on the
director or whatever
path.
We were called for a while. Yes, because Ron was here. Of course,
Ron Collins.
Ron Collins moved up. Ron was the administrative director at the time. And Ron and I, actually, I'd signed Ron up into the union, believe it or not, in the phone center store in Glen Burnie. And we worked well together. We had a history. And he asked me, did I want that job? I said, sure, I'll do that job. I'm not going to be a grievance handler the rest of my life. So that's when I became the director over here.
So describe those duties.
Those duties included a lot of different things that I didn't realize at first, but it was handling the executive level grievances, and that would be a grievance that is very common to the entire contract. It wasn't just a local's grievance. It was something that affected the language, if you will, or how the language was applied. So that was my responsibility to handle that. My responsibility was bargaining. And it was really to pitch in on all of these programs, whether it be political, mobilization, organizing. Whenever you had a spare moment, you were in.
Yeah. What kind of organizing was going on at that point?
We had a couple of organizers that came and went. We actually had assigned organizers that were staff. And we would only go when we were called. I mean, it wasn't something that I get to go out and pick a location and then try to develop a committee from it or anything of that nature. But I can remember we did a cable company over here in 2108's jurisdiction. I remember something on the Eastern Shore also to do with cable. There were others, but leave my head here. I had a group clear down in Southern Virginia as a local officer. That was an experience.
And mobilization during that time frame, how was that managed in District 2?
Mobilization depended on the bargaining unit that was in need of mobilization. It wasn't just during bargaining, in other words. There were times that we would have an issue that was statewide that the company was pushing, you know, trying to change something in their policy, and we're getting that pushback from the locals. And that was the one thing I enjoyed when I was a local president, was throwing that right back to them, whether it be I had a director that just, he was just opposed to them working through their lunch. You must take a lunch hour. And you must take it where your last job is. So if you're out in the middle of a cornfield, you're going to take it there. We're not going to pay you to come back to the garage. Well, we did a thing in my local where we went out and we bought sandwiches, and we had them meet within a 10-minute radius of where these people were. So you know what? They would just go bananas when they'd see 15 cable trucks out there. They would call us in, and we would talk about it, and next week we'd go back to, you could work through your lunch. They worked them overtime anyway. What was the big deal? But there were a couple of things we did that, again, that was on a local level. On a statewide level, we dealt with overtime issues. And that's always been a messy, messy issue. You sometimes can't figure out really what they want, other than it's always about control. So recognizing it's about control, you got to just learn how to take control sometimes. Not everybody gets that.
You had a big issue. I can't remember if it was 95, I think 98. The one that you stayed out for 5 months. Excuse me, you didn't stay out. You worked beyond expiration for 5 months.
Right.
And as I recall, there was a lot of tension because working beyond expiration, as opposed to going on strike, was... And so, as I recall, and Jeff, maybe you recall this as well, that took a lot of organization and education to have a work to rule.
Certainly.
Talk about that.
In 98, we also had a subsidiary in Bell Atlantic called BACSI. I forget what the acronym stands for, but they were like half an installer, I'll call them. They did some of the installation work. Their contract was not up, but they're doing what we called struck work at the time. We did things like, in my local, I had three locations for BACSI, and I had a meeting from each one. these kids, and they were kids, they were 19, 20 years old, they all had a van that they took home, so they would leave their house in the morning. They didn't have to have that second car at home. That was a big benefit to these guys, and you could definitely see it. We would get them together at each of the locations somewhere after work, talk to them for 2 weeks, I know I talked to them, and then pulled the trigger on it, and we explained to them that you're not going to go from your contract to our contract overnight. You are going to help us with our contract because we're going to picket you off of all these jobs. But here's what we can do to help one another. Turn those trucks in. Everybody turn your trucks in. Or if you're afraid just to go in and turn your truck in, drive to your first job. Call me at the hall. I'll have somebody out there with a picket sign. You can call your boss, say, come get your truck. I'm afraid for my life. That would be a smart technician. We did that, and in a course of like 3 days, our local had cleared the trucks off the street. And that was a mobilization thing. Pete did call me and say, what the hell did you say to them? I said, their livelihood's at stake too, quite frankly. But that took a long time. It took years after that to get both of those contracts together and to get them everything that they were entitled to, too. But they were brave young men to stand up and do that, to be honest with you. When I think back when they had a director, a female director of BACSI at the time, she asked me, she said, what did you say to them? I said, oh, I can't tell you. Because I knew that they also went to her. They went to her with things like, I'm going to get married. What kind of ring should I buy? I'm not kidding. These were young men that looked for people to tell them. But it was a part of an education process. Christ, not just for them, for me too. To know that, you know what, this will work. This plan will work. And we tried it with a couple other locals. They didn't have the amount of people come in, but they had people turn in their trucks, which we tried to help as best we could. And I think that was a turning point. Well, Pete told me it was a turning point in the bargaining. I said, well, good for them. Mm-hmm. But other than that, in 98 bargaining, it was just one of those prolonged things with healthcare was still on the table. And I think BACSI was still on the table. A lot of issues dealing with BACSI at work. You know, 13,000, again, that would have been in common issues bargaining. They got out from under it. We'd rather have them as a contractor, which worked for them, didn't for us.
You were on staff during some major strikes with Verizon.
Yeah.
2016, you were still on strike.
Yeah, I was at the bargaining table then. And which meant, it was 2016, we were in Philly, we were in New York, we were in Washington, D.C. at the federal mediation location, and we did
I meant 2000.
In 2000?
Yeah.
In 2000.
And then again in 2016, there was a big strike.
I was probably here in the field with mobilization activities. And then the next one, I think I was at the location, involved in bargaining. I couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you unless I look back and to see what issues were in that bargaining. That would have prepared me, too. But 9 chances out of 10, it still had to do with economics. They were just in a mode to downsize. Unfortunately, we bit into some of that with early outs. That's why you see the reduced number today. Just this year, you know what medical caps are in these contracts? We negotiated for retirees a medical cap, which said as long as the cost of their medical doesn't go over this dollar figure, they will not have to pay. Well, here we are with retirees this year in the Mid-Atlantic area. We have burst through the cap. So anybody that's pre-Medicare and retired are now contributing, and they weren't. They weren't as long as they had retired after 2013, something mm-hmm. like that. But, or before then, I should say. So here again, the North, a whole separate issue. The North people, for whatever reason, did not take as many ISP offers, didn't have as many early people leave. So they've not burst their caps because they don't have that many people in that group. So they've not broken out. That's a problem here. It's a problem when people just got the notice that it's $100 a month or something like that, which I'm Medicare eligible. It's not affecting me, and not that that's what it's about. But it's hard for them to understand when they haven't been paying it for years. So I still can't answer your question direct.
These are pre-Medicare retirees you're talking about now that are having to pay the $100.
Right.
Month. Yeah.
A month.
Yeah. So you've had an incredible career. What are some of your proudest accomplishments, would you say, for that period of time that you were active in the union, from steward all the way to your role in the district?
Well, I can say that it's advocating for people and trying to educate them. I'll take you to the cash outs. When we first went into this option for retirement, I know I probably had 15 different financial advisors have some type of seminar for the local to participate in. I've since run into, at my friend's 80-year-old birthday, one of the cable splicers there said, "Do you remember down at," and a location. He said, "I'm still with that guy." I said, "I'm glad you felt comfortable with them, and I'm glad they're doing a good job for you." But if they don't know it, I also have people I've run into that have told me, "I took the cash out, I bought a new car, I fixed something at the house, and now I'm working a job." And that saddens me. But it's back to that education piece for people and being an advocate for them to know that this is a good thing, but you got to understand what a good thing is. The idea that I have people that are not paying medical until this year. I mean, I had often told them, get out and meet your neighbors. Most of them are working two jobs, are paying for their medical already years ago. And that's the union difference here. So it gets back to, I'm proudest of being a problem solver for people and advocating for people, and hopefully have provided the means for people to live a comfortable life. I know I'm living a very comfortable life, and I'm sure hopeful that most of them are.
Mm-hmm. Any particular frustrations over your time?
I guess those, you know, that lead them to water, but they won't drink. That comes to mind. I mean, that one I'm telling you about that bought the car and that, I feel terrible for that person. I just can't imagine what it would be like to be 70 years old, still getting up going to work.
How many members does 2100 have today?
Today, I just was asking Dee that. She didn't know exactly, mm-hmm. but I can imagine they're probably 1,000 or less.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it when you left in 2004? Probably it already gone down.
It had already started going down, yeah, because of the ISP offers, and it was probably 2,500 or so. Yeah. It still was a good sized local.
I know my local was 2,500 members when I was local president. It's out of business today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, there's different ways to get their attention. I mean, if.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the typical person that was there 20 years ago. Their issue was overtime and how much of it can I work. Today, the issue is overtime and how much of it do I have to not work? Can I not work? You know, it's the other. I can remember having I don't know what you would call it. I think it was a legislative conference. And Jeff, you did this little workshop about how do you get people to sign up for COPE? Mm-hmm. When our local, it was the guys that were working all that overtime, making all that money. We took a check and we put on it. It was really about comp time. We put on there, here's where you worked 80 hours and what you get today. Here it is on comp time. You get a 40-hour check and an IOU is what you got. We did well on that. But that was that time, that period. You have to think of that each time you go out. If you can educate them.
If Debbie, You have anything else?
Nope. I think we had a very interesting conversation.
Gail, this is terrific. Thanks for agreeing to do this.
Well,
yes. Really,
Thank you.
I think it's important we sort of capture these snapshots of the history of our union, and whether somebody does something with them or not.
And how ordinary people can come together and do something. You're right.
Yeah.
I look around all the time and think, whew, you know, some of them, they were all high school educated. I knew that, but I can just really applaud most of them.
Yeah, you beat me. I started when I was 17, so you got me by a year. So.
Well,
and you were local president at what age, Jeff?
19.
It took you until what age?
Oh, I guess I had to be in my 20s. I still hold the record for longest holding the title here in District 2 for local president.
Yeah, 20 years. That's pretty remarkable. I mean,
but I liked it. I mean, I truly liked it. Had a good group that I work with. I still keep in touch with all of them, each group of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, I keep going back to this, but being a woman leading a plant local at that particular period of time is quite remarkable. I'm trying to think of a similar example back in District 4, and I'm drawing a blank right now.
Well, it was learning to cuss with three brothers.
Well, whatever. Whatever it took.